Okay, one more time with feeling. Hello.
One more time with feeling. Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay.
And I can hear you. Good, good, excellent. Good, good. Now why hasn't this gone up? There we go. Okay, put that out. Put that out. Yeah, bloom. Okay.
Oh, yeah, that sounds wonderful.
I try. I try hard. Okay, are we ready? Shall we begin?
Sure.
And hope for the best. Jesus Christ. I just accidentally zoomed in and the whole screen got big.
I did that a couple of times as well. I'd never done that before. I'm like, all of a sudden, yo! I'm like, wait, no, that's too close.
Okay, here we go. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Saturday, December 6th, 2025. It's just after 17 UTC as we're starting to record. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
Now, one thing before we get started, I meant to do like the prep for this, but I completely forgot until literally this very second, so I haven't done it yet, which is we are now in December, which means we are rapidly approaching our end of the year special shows.
Oh,
the last show of the year is going to be predictions for 2026. And the first show of next year is going to be review of our predictions that we made a year ago for 2025. Now, as I've done the last few years, I'm going to put up a Google Doc that has like some basic categories and invite our listeners to start dropping in things they want us to do predictions on. Now, you know, like I said, I haven't prepped the Google Doc yet, but this is heads up to start thinking about it. And I promise you for next week, I will have a link to that Google Doc. For anybody who remembers previous years, it's probably going to be the same URL as last year, but with 2025 changed to 2026. But I haven't set it up yet. And so start thinking about it. Start thinking about things you would like us to predict. We, of course, have things we always like tend to include anyway. But
pain.
But we are looking for suggestions from people and things you want us to predict.
I predicted pain for this year, I'm sure, and I'm pretty sure I was right.
You generally predict pain, and you generally predict that Fidel Castro will die.
Yes, I'm consistent.
Even though he's died many years ago. But,
well, you've
sometimes gotten it right and sometimes wrong, because sometimes you predict that he will die, and
right. Sometimes
you predict that he will be dead. And those
Correct.
Are different.
Those are different, right.
Yes.
You know, I agree. Those are different, okay? I don't think that if I predict he will die again this year, I could be next year. I will be correct. Or if I did that, I got to check back on the logs to see what I predicted. But yes, that tends to be accurate. I will say that my prediction for pain for this year was probably quite accurate.
Yeah,
I don't think that if anybody goes and describes 2025 and doesn't include the word pain,
that is one of your pretty safe predictions each year.
Yeah.
I will say, yes.
And this year was more accurate than others.
Yes. Anyway, so other than that, we're going to do our usual thing with less newsy stuff in the first segment and then moving on to more newsy stuff as we go.
Of course, I would be remiss to point out that it didn't seem that until this year, when I shared a video clip.
Yes, I did not
Lang
know where
in the
movie
pain
Rocky
thing was from.
III. Yes, I had no idea that
you
it
had
was
no
from
idea of where that came from.
Yeah, no, I had not the slightest clue, and then suddenly it was revealed to me. But yeah, I just thought that was a thing you did. I had no idea it was from something.
Yeah, no, it was. You know, I wasn't that original. I mean, I have some original ones, but not that one it was, you know, I guess, have you watched the Rocky movies?
I have only ever seen, and we recently
they must be one of them had to be on the AFI list.
The original Rocky was on the AFI list, and I think I'd seen it before, but I did actually recently, like within the last couple months, rewatch it with Alex. I'm not ready to review it on the show yet because I'm going in order, but
okay.
But I have only ever seen the original Rocky, none of the sequels.
None of the sequels. Okay.
None of the sequels.
And there's now, a lot since, of sequels.
Since I've now watched the first one, they will now be on the list to eventually get to them, including like they're still releasing these damn things, right?
They're They are still absolutely releasing these. But that was from Rocky III. Rocky III
the one with Mr. T.
Mr. T, yeah. I think it was in 82 that it was out, something like that. When was it released? Let's see. I am slow. Here we go. It was released. Yeah, I was right. 82. So it's been a while. So, and that was what Mr. T played, a guy named Clubber Lang, and he was asked at some point, like, you know, he was being interviewed, and he was asked, predictions, what are your predictions? And he looks at the camera all angry as a Mr. T look, pain.
Right. Yes. Anyway, so I am going to work on trying to catch up with my movie list and do two of those today. But in the meantime, Yvonne, what's your non-newsy, less serious thing to start off the show with?
My non-newsy, less serious thing start the show off with? What the hell? Fuck. What happened this week? I don't even remember. What was I doing?
You know, our list is very sparse this week. Like, of things
well,
that we've
I had
noted.
A very busy. Well, I was like busy, but it wasn't. It was the type of busy is a different type of busy. What happened is my wife this week has been working elections. There's been a local. My wife regularly works elections. There was a local, I think it's state representative election that off cycle because somebody died or something, whatever. And she was being replaced, not for our district. And they do early voting for those. And she's been doing early voting, you know, for this election, you know, at the site. And so she's been out of the house all day because she started working it last Saturday and she's been there every day. She's had to get there to the polling station, leave the house at 7:30 in the morning, and she's not getting home until 8 o'clock. So I've been having to take Manu to school, pick him up from school, take him to basketball, take him to tutoring, take him to here. So I have been and doing my job. Okay. You know, mm-hmm. because some of us have a job still. And, you know, and so I've been doing both at the same time. So it's just, I feel like I've just been running around back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
Okay. And
then one of the things that I was trying to solve this week is something that I did not expect, that the time I spent in the 80s programming COBOL would be useful.
So you were doing COBOL this week?
I had to do something related to COBOL this week, okay? And I didn't realize that the time that I spent programming in COBOL would be useful now in my career.
So you weren't actually programming COBOL this
week. I wasn't, but I was resolving an issue with it. The thing is, I remember when I coded in COBOL, it's the only language that I have used that a lot of basic is run on a real-time compiler. Okay?
Usually.
So you write the code and you have it and you run it and it's being compiled in real time. But COBOL, you take the code, you modify it, you compile it, and then you run it. Okay? So,
okay.
So if you are making changes to you go and like you rewrite some code, you have to recompile it first before you run it. Okay. And then that compiled code is the one that's run. And usually, you know, for every platform, you have to have a compiler, like I remember that I was using back then Ryan McFarlane COBOL, and I was running it on Xenix, And so the first thing I ever did, the only code I ever worked on in it was for a payroll program that was written for another hardware platform. But in order to run it on the hardware that we had, first we had to make some changes to it. The second thing was that we had to recompile it for the hardware that we were running. Okay, otherwise it wouldn't run, and you had to have the right compiler. And if you didn't have the compiler, but I have a customer that has PeopleSoft. Now, PeopleSoft that I knew, is not written in COBOL. It's a newer application. But I came to discover and find out, because I the only time I ever used PeopleSoft before was that we had the company at HP, we used PeopleSoft for, we had replaced our old ERP that we had for the old HR system, which was written in like whatever legacy system it was. We had PeopleSoft.
Right.
But that's the only time I ever really used it. But the company I work with, they owned it. And so there's a customer that has it, and all of a sudden, people called me from a project and said, hey, we need a COBOL compiler. And I'm like, wait, what? What do you mean? For what? I did not realize and learned over the last recent time that apparently everything that is batch processed in PeopleSoft is actually run in COBOL. I have no idea of that. Okay?
Okay.
And so...
It's well known that COBOL is still in use in all kinds of legacy things, but it's kind of surprising whenever you find out it's in use for something that you consider sort of an up-to-date modern thing that is...
Right.
You know,
because
whatever,
the application itself
as opposed
is
to
not
something
written.
That's been running in a closet for 40 years, you know?
Exactly. And that was surprising. Now, the application itself is not, but there are... But what I've come to find out is that, hey, there are certain... things that if you want to run batches, you want to do things, you want to code something, you know, you want to do some customization, it's written in COBOL. And so I had to go and I got on a conference call where I realized that the only guy on the call that had, you know, we're talking about, well, how many users do you really need to buy a compiler license? And I realized, well, I've actually done this. And the reality is that all you probably need is one, because you just sit one, you're going to have one licensed guy who's going to be sitting over there, and anything that's changed, he will be the guy who will be doing the compiling for that code to go and send that, then put in the system and run. But we don't really, not everybody needs one. And so I got on a call where there were like about 10 or 15 people. And I happened to be the only guy that had ever compiled anything in COBOL, Sam. And that makes me feel quite old. Fucking things.
Yeah, well, you
I
know,
mean,
that's,
shit, I am, I mean, if, it, you know, if that doesn't date me, I don't know what the fuck does.
That is certainly an option. Next thing, you'll be talking punch cards.
You know, I never used punch cards, but you know, did do a lot of the cards where you filled out the data by filling, you know,
bubbles.
You answered exempt the little bubbles, and then use then fed them into the IBM mainframe, you know, run test scores or whatever using those. Did those?
I don't think I ever actually used a punch card for anything real. I remember I had a punch card with like my name punched in it or whatever.
Oh, okay.
And I'm pretty sure my dad at least one point in time actually did use punch cards for actually like something real. So,
oh, gosh.
But you know, anyway, so Okay, you used COBOL. Anything else you got?
My knowledge, if my first-hand knowledge of using COBOL was actually useful in an actual business situation today in 2025.
I'm amazed.
Amazed is not the right word, but yes, it does definitely show that, fuck, I'm old.
So before we move on to my movies, and because you mentioned you're old, how your recovery continuing apace? You look like you feel good today.
I feel pretty good. I am feeling pretty good. So it's definitely a pace. We are now in week four, day what, one or two around there of it. It's definitely feeling well. They said 6 weeks. It's coming along. Yeah. So it's feeling good so far. Yeah.
Excellent. So I'm gonna bang out two movies. You ready
bang
for
out
two movies?
Two movies. Let's bang on the movies. Okay. All right. Let's see.
Okay.
What do we got for movies?
So first of all, I will have to issue a correction for a number of weeks ago when I talked about the movie Godzilla versus King Kong. Okay.
When was that out? What year is this movie?
When did Godzilla versus King Kong come out?
Yeah.
Okay. I will tell you. That is not the one I'm going to be talking about, but let me get the list up. Godzilla versus King Kong versus Godzilla. Let me get the title right. Was 1962.
So that was the 62 one. But didn't they do a modern remake of that?
There was Godzilla versus Kong in 2021, and okay. Godzilla X Kong: The New Empire in 2024.
And
by the way, upcoming Godzilla X Kong Supernova in 2027.
Well, I am maintaining my perfect streak of not having watched any of them.
So I am not talking about any of those modern ones. What I said wrong when I talked about King Kong versus Godzilla on the show earlier was I had said that, you know, we were working our way through both the Godzilla and the King Kong movies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I forgot which one we'd hit King Kong versus Godzilla in order in. And I thought maybe it was the Godzilla movies. I was wrong. I, in fact, had not yet started the Godzilla movies when we watched King Kong versus Godzilla. I had been working my way through the King Kong movies.
But not any Godzilla movies.
Yes, and the King Kong, on the King Kong side, I believe this is actually third in both of them. I of course have to check that now too. Da 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 da. Here we go. King Kong franchise. Where's the list? Yes, it's third in both. So the King Kong versus Godzilla is third in both franchises, but we were doing it on the King Kong side. Now, another side note before I go to the main movie here is that last night, it came up when we were picking a random movie to watch that Alex and I should watch the next King Kong movie.
Okay.
But then we realized that the first two King Kong movies, King Kong and Son of Kong from 1933, I had watched way back in 2015 before Alex was watching movies with me. He was only 6 years old at the time. So he requested that we restart the King Kong franchise. So at this very second, Yvonne, we are halfway through the original King Kong. We started it last night and paused because everyone was sleepy.
How many movies are there in the
King Kong franchise?
Yeah.
So I looked this up last night. It depends how you count. Like Wikipedia has the directed. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, including some direct-to-video animations in the King Kong side.
13. Damn. Yes.
Whereas in comparison, Godzilla has 40.
40?
40.
There are 40 Godzilla movies?
Including both Japanese and American versions, yes.
Wow. Fuck. That's a lot of movies.
Anyway, we have restarted the original King Kong with my son as of last night and paused halfway through it. We will continue later today. But my point of all of this extended introduction is that after we watched King Kong versus Godzilla, we realized we had not actually started the Godzilla franchise yet. So today's movie is the original Godzilla from 1954.
Okay.
So, and I will give it a very similar review to my review of King Kong versus Godzilla, which is that it is a bad movie. However, it is the type of bad movie that is extremely fun to watch.
Oh.
Because it is bad in an amusing way that keeps you laughing, keeps you making fun of it. Like, you know, when Alex and I watch these movies, like, we pause regularly to make snarky comments about the movie or to make fun of the special effects, that we're laughing all the time. Because, I mean, my God, it is a guy in a big rubber suit stomping on a model of the city, you know? It's hilarious. I will, of course, read the beginning of the Wikipedia plot summary just for context, but I mean, it's Godzilla. It's the monster goes into Japan and steps on things. Mm-hmm. But,
you know, basically, anyway, is what I... Yeah.
Plot. In 1954, after the Japanese freighter Aiko Maru is destroyed near Odo Island, another ship, the Bingo Maru, is sent to investigate, only to meet the same fate with few survivors. A fishing boat from Odo is also destroyed with one survivor. Fishing catches mysteriously dropped to zero, blamed by an elder on the ancient sea creature known as Godzilla. Reporters arrive on Odo Island to further investigate. A villager tells one of the reporters that something in the sea is ruining the fishing. That evening, a storm strikes the island, destroying the reporter's helicopter, and Godzilla, briefly seen, destroys 17 homes, kills 9 people, and kills 20 of the villagers' livestock. Odo residents travel to Tokyo to demand disaster relief. The villagers and reporters' evidence describes damage consistent with something large crushing the village. The government sends paleontologist Kyoto Yamane to investigate the island, where giant radioactive footprints and a trilobite are discovered. The village alarm bell is rung, and Yamane and the villagers rush to see the monster, retreating after seeing it as a giant dinosaur. Yamane presents his findings in Tokyo, estimating that Godzilla is 50 meters, 160 feet tall, and has evolved from an ancient sea creature, becoming a terrestrial creature. He concludes that Godzilla has been disturbed by underwater hydrogen bomb testing. Ah. Debate ensues about notifying the public about the danger of the monster. Meanwhile, 17 ships are lost at sea, ... Plot continues. I will note that we have been making a point to watch the Godzilla movies with Japanese audio and English subtitles.
Okay.
You know, not dubbed into English.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
You know, but yeah, it's still funny. horrible special. I mean, this was 1954. You don't expect that much, but still, even for 1954, it's kind of weak in terms of special effects. But honestly, that's what gives it its charm. The acting is not that great, but even with the language difference, it's not just, you know, oh, the acting's weak, they're speaking Japanese. No, no, you can tell the acting is weak, just generally. but it's hilarious. I'm going to give it a thumbs up. And, you know, this whole genre is loved by lots of people specifically because of this kind of feel that I'm talking about. You know, it's nobody, I mean, some of the modern remakes, they're trying to make it a little bit more serious and have a high special effects budget and stuff. But the reason people like are fans of these old ones
is precisely is because,
just because they're ridiculous.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's the if I remember when I watched it, the whole thing that, you know, the little bits that I watched, because I'm pretty sure I've not watched any of these in its entirety.
Just, all the way through.
Yeah. Just bits and pieces, is that the part that made it funny was exactly that. That it was just the special effects were just dumb. And that's what made it funny.
Yeah. And the story is silly, and the plot's is very thin, you know.
it's just a big dinosaur destroying the city.
Well, and they do have humans. Like, there's side plots going on with the humans. Like, there's this guy and his girlfriend, and he's trying to... The girlfriend gets in the way of where Godzilla's going to be, and he has to save her. And, you know, and then there's various people that you care about, or at least theoretically care about, in somewhere because they're involved in the battle against Godzilla, or they're involved in trying to figure out what's going on or whatever. So there are humans in these movies that have something to do and have some sort of plot, but none of it really matters all that much. The main point is the guy in the rubber suit, like, running around destroying things. So that's movie number one.
Movie number one.
So,
okay.
Movie number two is from 2003. It is a made for, is this correct? I just want to make sure. I'm pretty sure it was made for TV. Yes, it was made for TV for the Sci-Fi Channel. And it's Riverworld from 2003. Have you ever heard of either
I never heard of Riverworld.
So, Riverworld, I was a fan of the novel series. There was a series of science fiction novels by Philip Jose Farmer that, you know, was released from 1971 to 1983. And I remember reading and liking these books as a teenager. So, you know, I was excited, you know, movie coming out about it. And I don't remember if I saw it back in 2003 when it was new. I might have, but I watched it again last year, and this year, we're now talking about movies I watched last January. So I'm 11 months behind.
That's not that bad.
It's not that bad. Anyway.
I mean, we've been doing the show for 20 years. I mean, you know, it's not that bad.
Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, the basic premise of the books, let's start with that, is every human being who's ever lived is resurrected around the banks of a river on an alien planet. And they have to figure out what's going on with the world.
I never heard of this movie.
Why were they resurrected? What was going on? Who are the beings that brought them there? All of this kind of stuff. Okay.
Was this a TV movie? Yeah, I get. Yes. Okay.
Sci-Fi Channel.
Okay. All right. So that's one reason I had never heard of this. Okay. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was intended to be the pilot for a series, but the series never got made. They did try a reboot in 2010 as well. I have not watched that yet.
Wasn't exactly acclaimed, is what I'm looking at here. It's got rating of barely 5.1, which is really, really low on IMDb. I mean, a 5.1 is really really a clunker on IMDb.
Yes.
It's got... Let's see. Before you get to your rating, I'll read here. 5.1 on IMDb, 37% on Rotten Tomatoes, only 41% in Just Watch. At Google users, 58% said they like it, but I have a feeling that this is like a little bit of a selection bias, because probably the only people that go there to Google to review it are actually the people that liked it. Probably the rest of the people are not really giving a shit. I'm like, well, this thing sucked. I'm not going to Google to look at it. So that's what I see. So Sam, what are your thoughts?
So I am giving it a thumbs down. It was just stupid. Not memorable in the it was not memorable in the slightest in terms of the actual movie itself. The thing is, I having been a fan of the books.
Ah, I see.
It kept annoying me. Differences and things that were done badly and things that were just like, you know, missing. It was not a good adaptation of the books, I felt, either. Like, first of all, they didn't, like, it wasn't centered around the same character, you know, like, there were a lot of things that just, like, I felt like this is not a good adaptation of the books. It's sort of, even the basics of the concept weren't, like, just weren't implemented well. There were little details that I kept, like, stopping it to talk to Alex about, like, well, you know, they did this way, but in the book it was like this, and they had this thing, and, like, but in part, like, I'll give you one example.
Mm-hmm.
And I recognize why they wouldn't have done it. This is not an example of why it was a bad adaptation. Any adaptation would have changed this, but it's what I obsessed about. Okay. In the book, like, you know, first of all, everybody's resurrected naked. Initially.
I figured you would
like
that.
They did do that in the movie. I did like that. I enjoyed that. That was good. But, and they did do that in the movie as well. Although it was a made for TV movie. So you didn't see anything.
No.
This is ridiculous.
It was implied nudity rather than actual nudity. But no, the thing is, they discover these giant, like, mushroom things that once a day erupt and give them little canisters of supplies.
Okay.
In the books, one of the supplies that comes out of the little canisters are these things that are essentially washcloths with magnetic edges, and people made clothes out of those.
Magnetic edges?
Yeah, so, like, you could take a bunch of these little squares of fabric and, using the magnets, connect them together and make clothes and stuff.
Interesting.
Okay? And I remember reading the books thinking that was a really nifty concept, and I liked the idea. Like, you know, you know, whereas in the TV show, the canisters just contained clothes.
Oh, no, my God, no.
And all kinds of different clothes, too. So the people were wearing all kinds of different things. One of the things in the book is that fashion did arise by people creating different sorts of things out of the magnetic washcloth things. But it was all made out of the same underlying material, and it was all wears. Anyway, and obviously, this is a change I would have made, too, if I was adapting it. Like, explaining the little washcloth things is a little esoteric. It was just completely non-memorable, and for fans of the book, it seemed to be not. It didn't do it justice, I think. And also, they were trying. They moved really fast, really far. Like,
okay,
the books contain. I mean, it was a five book series? Did I say? Yeah, it ended up being five books, and you only very, very slowly start figuring out what's going on in the world that they're talking about. And, you know, the first book is all about sort of adapting to the fact that you're in this universe, and you only find out little tiny glimpse and hints of what's really going on and stuff like that. And because they were making a movie out of it, they wanted to accelerate that. So you figured out a little bit more about what was happening a little bit faster. But, you know, they were hoping to make a series out of it. So they could have still dragged that out longer.
Right.
You know, one of the things is, in both the book and the movie, is, you know, you get all humans from all time resurrected together. So you get people from different historical periods interacting with each other, which is cool. You get some famous people from different periods. One of the main characters ends up being Samuel Clemens, Mark Twain.
Okay.
You know, and that's kind of cool. I mean, he makes a riverboat because, you know, Samuel Clemens was a riverboat pilot on the Mississippi, and he ends up building a riverboat and blah, blah, blah. And that's in both the books and the movie. But, you know, anyway, it was not great. As you read the, you know, descriptions, like, if you were a fan of the books, maybe watch it for completeness, but, you know, your time would be better spent going and digging the books back up.
Movie adaptations of books are always, like, You know, they're such a crapshoot. I mean, there are some that are done
sometimes
very
it's
well.
Done well.
No, sometimes they're done well.
And some are so bad.
Honestly,
you have to evaluate them on their own merits, though. Like, I'm this comparison to the book thing is somewhat unfair in some cases because it is a different media and different things work and different things don't work.
But some people just make really shitty movies out of good books. I mean, I still remember, I forever think that, you know, from the Clancy book series, there was only like one movie that was really good as an adaptation. It was Hunt for Red October. The rest were meh. They weren't that great. They even brought Harrison Ford in and some or whatever. And honestly, they deviated so much from the book. Okay. In things that didn't need deviating is my point. They changed the story completely in many cases. You know, one that was probably the one that was the worst was they did the Sum of All Fears. And the entire story, everything changed. Okay. It had barely any, semblance to what was in the book.
That's the kind of adaptation I hate the most, actually. Like,
I'm like, why the book then? You know?
Yeah, and there are a variety of these. Another was, and I haven't seen this, but I won't mention ones that I haven't seen as examples, but even though I've heard people make the complaint. But yeah, there are certainly ones where really the only thing is sort of the one sentence high level concept of the book and maybe a couple characters.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah,
nothing else matches.
Yeah.
I will say that, like you said, just make a new one. Don't even bother.
The great example is the Jason Bourne movies and their source material in the Ludlum books. The reality is, I will say that the Ludlum books, in my personal opinion, they're kind of dull. Ludlum was not that good. And then a whole bunch of them were written by somebody else that wasn't even him because he died. And then somebody decided to write books in his name anyway. The movies. Because the source material, the book, was not that great. They actually, great. We got the character born. We know he had amnesia. We know he did this. We know he did that. But if we do what's in the book, this doesn't really work. Okay? All right. Let's do something a lot more exciting. And so even though it carried the name of a book or whatever happened in the movie was way better than whatever the fuck the source of the source book was. So they did a good job on that, of making the movie a lot better than, in my opinion, a mediocre book.
Yeah. Anyway, this is what I would say. I would recommend people go read the books, but I at the same time, I haven't read them since I was a teenager, so I don't know if I would still like them now.
Okay,
you know, like they may not have aged well, or they may include
that happens.
Whatever, you know. So I enjoyed them as a teenager, but that was a long time ago.
Again, reminding our audience how old we're getting. Thank you, Sam.
Oh yes, of course. Okay. Shall we take a break and then hit serious stuff?
Serious?
Serious.
XM radio?
No.
Not that kind of?
Not the star either.
Not the star either? Okay. All right. It might be time to get serious.
As promised last week, the first break today is a wiki of the day. So enjoy.
Wiki.
Doo-doo-doo. Hello. This is Longform Gregory. I'm here to let you know about Sam the Curmudgeons of the podcast, the Wiki of the Day podcasts. Wiki of the Day comes in three varieties: popular, random, and featured. Each highlights a new Wikipedia article each day. They just pick the articles differently. This week on Random Wiki of the Day, you would have heard this summary for Vanessa, British TV series. Vanessa is a British daytime talk show presented by British broadcaster Vanessa Feltz. The show was originally broadcast on ITV from May 13, 1994 to September 18, 1998. In August 1998, it was reported that Phelps had been sacked by Anglia because of her unreal demands to have her wages doubled to £2.75 million. Phelps also wanted the show's production base moved from Ipswich to London and to front more primetime shows. The show would end when Phelps moved to the BBC the following year, where she presented The Vanessa Show, a primetime morning show following a similar format. Vanessa was replaced by Trisha shortly after airing. In 2025, following Phelps's announcement of leaving her role on ITV morning talk show This Morning, Vanessa returned to Channel 5 as a daytime talk show, being advertised as an alternative to ITV daytime talk show Loose Women. That's it. See? Fun, entertaining, and educational, right? Okay. Now look for and subscribe to the Wiki of the Day family of podcasts on your podcast playing software of choice, or just go to wikioftheday.com to check out our archives. Now back to Curmudgeon's Corner. Do, do, do.
Okay, now we're back. So, Yvonne, you want to kick it off, picking our first newsy topic? Newsy, news, news, news?
Newsy. Well, you said it with the newsy.
Oh, not nuzzy. Is it newsy? Is it nuzzy?
I don't know.
You want to talk more about her?
I would really prefer not to. Although she was in the news again. I guess she got fired or quit or something. Oh, we didn't put a lot in here this week.
No, our list is so sparse this week. I added a couple things, but like there's...
You know what? I just actually, there is one that was from last Saturday that we didn't talk about, and I actually just pulled up an article on it. It's related to a couple, it's related to cost of living, okay, which we didn't talk about.
Okay, let's talk about the cost of living.
So, you know, I mean, this is relevant politically, like right now, as the Republicans are arguing about what to do about these health subsidies, and they haven't really done anything, like right now. And there was an article that I had shared about somebody that was calculating that the true poverty line should really be at $130,000.
That's a lot, Yvonne. What is it really right now?
It's $35,000 for a two-person household with two kids, okay?
So for a four-person family.
Yeah. $35,000, which I don't care where you are living in the United States. I mean, you're at that point you are heavily dependent on government aid to really be able to eke out a sustainable existence, okay? There's just no way at $35,000. I mean, at that level with a family, you need to be getting SNAP, Medicaid, maybe even some housing assistance, I mean, in order to be able to pay. Because, look, at $35,000, here's one of the issues that you've got right now. $35,000 gross, okay? One of the things is that we have one of the most regressive taxes that we have is Social Security tax. So anybody at the $35,000 level cannot escape paying the 7% for 7.5% for Social Security. Okay. So that right off the bat, you know, takes away $2,600. Okay. Right off the bat. No exemptions, no nothing. Yet unemployment tax, other stuff or whatever, that gets you up to $3,000. You can't get out of those. So you're already down to $32,000 right off the bat. Okay? Add sales tax anywhere that you live. For any money that you spend, you're buying shit, you're paying sales tax, okay? That also takes a chunk out of these people as well. Another probably, they got to be spending $10,000 to $15,000 a year in taxable stuff. That's another $1,000. So you're really down to like $30,000 of actual money. Divide that by 12 months for $2,500 for a family of four. When you are looking at a median car payment right now, a $750 in an America that is heavily dependent on cars, okay? Think about this. On a family of four, for sure, half their money is going to transportation. Even if they bought used cars.
I was going to say the 750 is for like a new car though, right?
Yeah. But even, right. But okay. But take it down to a used car. Take it down that they have two used cars. Say they're paying $350 a month for each. They're going to need two cars. And most of this nation, if you've got two kids, so that gets you to $700. Add auto insurance. Auto insurance $400.
I definitely know where, yes, they ideally would need two cars. Lots and lots of families deal without because they just can't.
But most of the time they can't deal with one car. The reality is that those families somehow have to scrounge how to get a second one. Because there's just, if the two people have jobs and if they have kids, there's just no, I mean.
And they're living in some place without adequate public transportation.
Public transportation, which is most of this nation.
Yeah.
You have to figure it out. But once you add, think about this. Two car payments of $350, $700. Add car insurance, $400. You're $1,100. Add gas. Not cheap right now, right? $300-$400 a month. You're already at $1,500. These people have $1,000 just in the transportation. They haven't paid for a place to live. They haven't bought food. So saying that that's, you know, that above that you're not in poverty at $40,000 is crazy. And the thing is, what they were talking about the $130,000. Look, they were considering a household payment that basically you're paying $2,000 for your house, $1,000 for your groceries, $1,500 for your car transportation. And one of the things that a lot of people have to pay for is daycare, which I've seen a lot. If you're paying for daycare, $2,000 a month, if you have to pay for daycare.
And I believe I read that the person who did this analysis used picked a county in New Jersey as their sample. And obviously, exactly, there are places that are more and less expensive, but the thing is that
I said, listen, take out 34, listen, take out the daycare. Take it down. If you made this down to $90,000, okay, and not the 130 because you picked like a lower place to live, you do the math after tax or whatever, especially because one of the problems that they're talking about in an article I just shared today is the benefit cliffs. Okay. Uh-huh. Because what's the problem? And this is a problem like with a lot of what Biden kept trying to do, which he couldn't do as much as he wanted to, was to help people in the middle class because of those benefit cliffs, like with child tax credits and stuff or whatever. You remember how he wanted to institute one of the things that, you know, the Democrats don't care about the middle class. Biden was out saying he tried his damnedest to make sure that people had universal access to daycare.
This is one of those things, by the way. I just want to say, like, to me, it is like malpractice when politicians put in place things with cliffs to begin with. Like, come on, folks. Like, on almost anything, you can design the program. So instead of having a hard cut, for those who don't know, benefit cliffs are things like where there is a hard and fast threshold.
Right.
Below it, you get some benefit. Above it,
you get zero.
And so it creates a system where, like, let's say the threshold is on income. And just for the sake of argument, let's say it's $20,000 is a threshold. If you make $19,999.99, you get the benefit. You make one penny more, you get nothing.
That's right.
You know, and sometimes they're not quite that harsh. They're
not quite
that
steep, but they are pretty steep. But they are pretty steep. Yes.
And they're, you know, it is not that tough to create things where instead of having hard thresholds, you have, you know, a graduation that goes from over an extended length of time that sort of eliminates that threshold where, if you're at a low enough level, you get the full benefit. And as you make more and more money, you get less and less benefit up to the point where you can afford to pay for it yourself. And now you get zero, you know, but, and I've often advocated for just give everybody the benefit and tax it back from the people who can't afford it as just a right. simpler if model anyway.
Right. But. And you, yeah. And you, and that makes sense. I agree with your thinking with that.
But in reality, you know, we've got lots and lots of programs with these cliffs, which cause all kinds of incentive problems. They cause people to like, not, yeah, like they can't make more money because if they did, they would lose their benefit and stuff like that. And it's just like, it completely messes up incentives. Also, it creates a huge bureaucracy to enforce the threshold because you have to measure whatever it is that is the threshold. They often have to do extra paperwork. There are all kinds of problems with it. But anyway, go ahead.
Sorry. So the whole thing is that this goes to this entire thing where, you know, how Trump has been getting upset because he's been getting hit on affordability and how his ratings on the economy keep diving. And this entire thing also with the healthcare subsidies being, you know, eliminated by the GOP for a lot of people. And this is the shit that's hitting the affordability crisis. This is and the Republicans are not doing anything about it. They pay lip service to it, but not actually doing anything. And right. I get people like I get people that keep saying, well, the Democrats didn't try to do anything with it. Damn it. Biden tried really, really hard to do certain things to actually right. address this, you know, and none of the Republicans were in for it. OK, you had the whole issue with they didn't have enough votes with, you know, Manchin and Sinema. Manchin kept blocking a lot of this stuff as well. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so the reality is that he was trying very hard to do shit to directly address these things. And the Republicans would have none of it. None of it. And so, you know, in his first year, he was able to get people child tax credit checks. Okay. He had pushed this stuff to try to get he wanted to give everybody fucking child care. So people were not like that example in $130,000 where you're living in a place and you're having to pay $2,500, $3,000 for daycare for your kids. So people are in the workforce and they're not going broke and they're not making the decision of because it almost becomes, unless the job is making a ton of money, you can't afford that child care. It makes no sense to be basically working just to be paying child care. It just doesn't for many people. And so
at that point, you might as well stay home and take care of the kid.
Exactly. But that also harms the workforce as well.
Right.
You know,
and you still need money for other things.
And you still need money for other things. And so, and there was another article that was like that I was looking at today. And this has been going around that with surging auto debt that repos across the U.S., they talk about that car-dependent Miami feels the pain. But the reality is that across the board in the United States right now, there is a surge in car repossessions, okay? There was this report out, like, right now that found that annual car repossessions and low defaults, fall rates are at the highest since the years during and immediately after the Great Recession. Think about this. Mm-hmm. People are defaulting on their cars at levels not seen since the 2008 financial crisis. I mean, people are really, really, really struggling. Okay. This is really bad. And we've got Republicans at the helm that don't seem to give a shit.
I heard Donald Trump say this week that the affordability crisis is a Democratic scam. It's all just a bunch of lies.
That is correct. That is exactly what he said. Yes. That is exactly what he said.
Isn't he right?
Oh, of course he's right. It's all scam. No, he's not right. Fucking asshole. And here's another problem that we've got right now. They keep focusing on the Fed lowering rates, blah, blah, blah. I have been talking about how because of what Trump has done this year, because of his actions with foreign trade and alienating foreign buyers of U.S. treasuries. Even with expected interest rate cuts, none of those are making a dent on the 30-year mortgage rate. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The 30-year mortgage rate is not dependent on the short-term rates that the Fed sets. It's dependent on the 10-year U.S. Treasury 10-year rate. And that fucker won't budge. It is not moving down. It's not moving down. And there was nothing that they could do to make it move down. In large part because it takes policy changes policy changes that Trump already made have made it that the stupid rate is remaining stubbornly high. And none of those are easy to undo. The trade war is the main reason why the stupid 10-year won't go down. And because he hasn't really backed off on any of this shit, it's causing the problem where you've got affordability for a lot of shit where people are struggling right now because inflation is higher than he pushed inflation back up. And it's pushing interest rates higher because the reason why the 10-year dropped had a lot to do with our trade balance and our trading partners willing to be holding U.S. treasuries. And they have had, because of Trump, they have been less willing to hold them unless they get paid more. That's the way the bond market works, okay? You know, you will hold something that's very sure, that you feel safer and pay a lower rate. But if you start feeling insecure about it, then the rate goes up.
Right.
You're a higher risk. You need to pay more. And Trump has made that America is a higher risk borrower. And there is nothing that he is doing that's going to fix that.
So speaking more broadly than just affordability, you know, we got a ton of recession indicators, don't we?
Oh my God, everything is flashing red, yes.
So go into that a little bit more.
Jobs, by the way, they went and decided not to publish a whole bunch of economic data.
Oh, remember really? This? Well, I don't understand. Like, why do you think
that could be, Sam? Do you think it's because it all looked great?
Yvonne, we know that they have said that these all of these metrics they've discovered were being manipulated by the Democrats and were bullshit numbers. So they have to get a handle on everything. They can't publish it while they don't know.
Ah, that's why. Yeah, no, it obviously it has to be because all the data was shit. The ADP jobs report showed that we had the worst period of hiring that we've had in years as well. In terms of private sector hiring, it's been awful. We had the most layoff notices that we've had since the Great Recession. I don't know if you heard about this story.
I am proud to be part of that, you know, that story.
Okay, yeah. I have contributed
did you notice in my own way, yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things where all the fucking indicators are flashing red, okay, about this. Yeah. And the fact that the only thing that held up GDP this year is investment in AI.
Oh, God. Yeah. That makes you feel good. Yeah, there's no like frothy bubble there or anything.
Look, there are things in the AI space that obviously has happened with a lot of these waves that are overvalued. I don't doubt that. There's a whole bunch of things. But also I think we've got on that space, we've got opinions like that are all over the place about this, right?
I had shared on the show, one of the shows while you were in surgery, the one where Bruce and Ed were on, I talked about, I shared this on the Curmudgeon's Corner Slack too, but there was some chart, I believe it was in The Economist, where they said predictions on AI's effect on world GDP.
They had a chart.
Well, basically, the two extremes of the thing were one that went up to infinity when you get the singularity and AI takes over everything. and one that goes down to zero because the AI causes human extinction. And that was the extremes of the prediction, you know? So it's like, okay.
And that's basically what you see in the market and with everybody talking about this. That is basically the spread of opinions. I think that objectively looking at this, one of the things, you know, they keep trying to compare it to 2000 and the tech bubble. There's one thing. One of the things that was the biggest issue in the 2000 tech bubble is there's no monetization. They kept building cool shit without any way to monetize it. Okay. All right.
Right.
That's not what's happening with any of this AI stuff. There is clearly a path to monetizing this. I mean, I have seen this happen, like with a lot of the things that are being done. I don't have an issue with finding the ways to monetize it, but I also find so many people that decry it. Yet, the use and adoption is no, nobody's using this stuff. That's bullshit.
Oh, everybody's using it.
Everybody's using it. Everybody's using it. And people sometimes are using it that they don't even know they're using it. Okay.
And like in my example, and I'm paying. I am paying several AI companies at this very moment. I think I'm paying Cursor. I'm paying Anthropic. I'm paying OpenAI right now. I've got regular monthly subscriptions for all three of them. I use one of them a lot more than the other two. So I may want to change that up at some point. But like at the moment, I'm using all three.
I'm using it practically every day. And listen, of the younger generation, those people
that's
can't
how you
live
do school,
without it.
Right?
Man,
how would you write an essay for school without ChatGPT?
I told you that my experience. I bumped into a guy that said that he doesn't understand how he could write an email without AI anymore. And so I see a lot of people, you hear a lot of loud people complaining, oh, they're forcing me, a co-pilot, and this, or whatever. I don't want to, blah, 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 blah. Where the reality is that we've got an entire generation of people right now that are 100% dependent on AI for basic things every day. So when they are trying to tell me how this is a complete bubble, that they're building shit that nobody is using, that is absolutely
and by the way,
a lie.
Could they be overbuilding? The adoption rate on this is insanely high. I mean, the stuff we're talking about didn't exist two years ago.
So that's why when I go, when I see people, they're trying to tell me, look, is there stuff that could be, that is overvalued, okay? That you know, we're overpaying for it, that where maybe they may be overspending in the short term on certain things. I believe that, but the reality
is that the typical pattern that happens on all kinds of waves like this, where the first run companies who are really driving it end like burning out and not making the monetization work, and it's the second wave that ends up being the ones that really
Or something happens in the middle. Listen, with a lot of things, let me give an example of like real estate, like back in 2008. A lot of, you know, we're talking about how there was a lot of overbuilding into 2008. But the reality is that in the next 5 years, all that real estate got bought up. And by the way, the prices that we thought were crazy in 2008 now are cheap.
Right.
And so that's the thing where, these waves sometimes wind up. It happened in the PC industry in the 90s.
Well, all of a sudden, there
was a wave of overbuilding of PCs, and all of a sudden, they tried to put too many PCs on the market, and all of a sudden, they had to cut prices in order to get people to buy. And some companies lost money for a little bit because of whatever. But then after, you know what? Now,
well,
whatever.
Generally speaking, I mean, these bubbles and such aren't necessarily saying this thing pops and is gone forever. It's just that there's stuff that's premature and over, you know, and so, yeah, you get the up, you get the down, and then you have it slowly go back up again. And very
well
end up higher than the bubble
was. But there are certain things in the bubble that we talk about in bubble that are, like, impossible. It was like, you know what? Like, people were paying 400 times earnings for Cisco. Look, there was no mathematical model ever to get to 400 times earnings to make Cisco sell enough to make that value make sense. Okay. But right now, when they're trying to tell me that NVIDIA is in a bubble where they are at, they're comparing, I got people comparing NVIDIA to Cisco, whereas NVIDIA is like a 20 some odd times future earnings, whereas Cisco was at 400 times. I'm like, okay, guys, look, you guys are not looking at the numbers. You guys are not looking at the numbers. I'm sorry, but you're comparing two things that are different. Now, when you're telling me that you've got a Palantir that's at 500 times earnings and that I can't make or figure out how in the world they're going to, you know, make that kind of money, and you've got a Tesla out there, and you've got some other stuff that's like valued like that. Yes, I do agree. And there's a whole bunch of overvaluation, and there is that kind of stuff. But I do think, but the biggest thing that I keep seeing is all these people trying to go on TV and trying to tell me how nobody uses AI, AI doesn't work, or whatever, blah, blah, blah. Let me tell you something. AI can do a whole bunch of fucked up things. And like you said, I think it is one of the most polarizing technologies that we have ever deployed. And it shows in that Economist article that you mentioned where the spread was, why they're going to be destroyed by it, or, you know, the edge of the outcomes was like the entire spectrum of the existence of the planet, basically. Yes. I think that people to say that it's not being used, when I see so many people right now that basically just depend on it every day.
Well,
and as we've talked about on this technology, it's
also continuing to evolve very rapidly. I mean,
when we
started talking about this 2 years ago, you know, there were all kinds of problems, and it was bad.
And in
some ways it still is, but the ratio of utility to badness is shifting over time. It is getting better over time.
It is getting a lot better.
And even at this point, like, even comparing, if you go back and look 3 months, there's a noticeable difference, let alone if you're looking back a year. And so it's really hard to predict where we're going. And there is the question of, okay, you can see the path to monetization, but we're still very much in the phase where all of these companies are spending a shit ton more than they're making in order to grow the technologies, do the improvement, you know. Yeah. But like a lot of the big name brands that everybody talks about, you know, they're investing that to continue improving the technology, to spur that adoption, you know, all the usual things that happen in the early growth stages of things. And so the question is, where does all that stabilize and who's left standing? Do you have a game of musical chairs and you've got like 10 players and only two of them survive? Maybe, you know?
Maybe. For all we know. But bottom line is that, you know,
anyway, you were this is the only thing the GDP.
That is a GDP. The thing is that I think that obviously there could be too much froth in this, but saying that it's just, this isn't a tulip bulb bubble. Okay. All right.
I will say, by the way, if you account for everything, you know, tulips are probably cost more than they did during the tulip craze, like at least nominally.
Probably not because
it was like people were spending their entire year's income on one tulip and stuff.
Yes, but I don't think tulips are that expensive like right now. I wonder how much a tulip bulb is right now. That's a great question.
You should get the like long-term chart of tulip bulbs going all the way back to the...
I should try to find one of those. But anyway, well, bottom line is that, unfortunately, the economy is only being held up by that, and that's not a lot of companies.
Right.
That are in this gig.
Well, okay? And in general, I've seen a number of people talk about how the uneven distribution of the economy is a significant issue in terms of companies. Like you mentioned, there's somebody did a chart where they're like, here's the S&P 500. here's the S&P 500 without the 10 companies who are doing well.
Now, and to be fair, I looked at that, and to be fair, even since 2020, the increase in the stock market on the non-whatever companies, the ones that are not involved in that, was 120%. That's not a bad return, okay?
But the other ones,
it's 1,000+%, yeah.
Well, and in the last year, the others have been more down.
Right.
But also I've seen like analysis of like things like consumer spending and stuff. Mm. Consumer spending is being held up by the top 10%. Like the top 10% who's invested in the stock market, making money from the stock market, all this kind of stuff. They're doing well. They're spending lots of money. They're doing, you know, they're buying their lots of Christmas presents. The other 90% is hunkering down.
Okay. Yeah.
And so you see that division as well.
Not totally. And so this is not sustainable. This is not sustainable. The problem that the GOP has is politically, this is a time bomb in their hands. Because really, the guys that are hurting, for the most part, are their constituents. Those are the guys that had voted them in because supposedly the Biden economy wasn't working for them and the Republicans were going to fix the economy. And what they have done is make it incredibly worse for them. And all the surveys right now show that. And they're not doing anything to fix it.
Yvonne, has this pattern happened before? Has this pattern happened before? Have Republicans come in when the Democrats left them a good economy and then something happens? It's just bad luck, right?
Yeah, it's just bad luck, yeah.
Oh, it's because the Democrats really left them a mess.
Yeah, they left them a mess. Yeah. I mean,
yes,
October,
this has happened before. This has been the typical pattern for Republican administration going back like decades now.
Yeah. October 2024. There was an article in The Economist on the cover.
Yes.
That the headline was "The American Economy, the Envy of the World." That was the headline, October 2024. And right now, it's a basket case. Like right now, it really is. I mean, it's being held up by one massive technology shift that has caused a massive spend in that direction, but the rest of the economy is stagnating. It's suffering badly. I mean, look, all these immigration raids are hitting the economy negatively. Okay, all right, they're driving up costs. Okay, you've got, in some places now you've got a dearth of workers for certain things. Okay, and what it's doing is it's driving up costs of construction and some other things because they can't get workers for that. Okay, and then you've got on the other part where they took a chainsaw to the federal government and cut hundreds of thousands of jobs, driving up costs because the deficit went up while creating a mass of unemployed people at the same time. And they went and they raised the tariffs, which impacted a lot of small, medium businesses, and it's impacting individuals heavily because it's driving up costs. It's everything that they have done is just bad for the economy. All of it. This week, they were trying to tout how we're going to bring back manufacturing of chips to the U.S. Fuck, Biden had been working on that and had more success than that over the last 4 years with the CHIPS Act than they ever did in their lifetime.
It was a whole big thing.
Yeah. And it was making progress. All the green manufacturing with the new energy, and they hit that too. So they fucked that part of the industry too, which was also surging.
Mm-hmm.
Everything they have done, it's the saying. Oh my God, what the hell? This political commentator said, it was the one that repeated. I think it was Conway. Everything Trump touches dies.
Yes. So, Yvonne, I guess we can save the real predictions for the prediction show for next year, but like, how bad is this going? And it's going to get worse before it gets better, right?
Oh, God,
there's no
yes.
way.
There's no
it's
way.
It's going to
no.
get a lot worse.
They're not turning this around anytime soon. No, they're not doing it. Like I said, they're not doing anything to fix it. They're making it worse. Look, when people's pocketbooks get hit next year with the double whammy of losing insurance coverage, or those that keep it have their this is tens of millions of households that are getting this impact. Think about all the other impacts that they've had negatively. Aside from okay, great, so now they've got their health insurance rates are soaring, so that reduces their disposable income. Bam, you got that. They also went on student loans, remember, student debt. Remember mm-hmm. how yep. that was also a big positive on the economy because they were forgiving a lot of that and suspended payments on a lot of those? Well, they lifted all of that, okay?
Yep.
That's also hitting millions and millions of people as well. They just keep fucking people, Sam.
So, Yvonne, order of magnitude, are we talking about short, quick recession that people barely notice? Are we talking 2008 level Great Recession, or are we talking 1929 level Great Depression? What are we in for?
More early 90s style recession.
Okay, tell me more about like what was that like?
The early 90s recession was a period of very low growth to negative growth where employment was you know, people were struggling to find jobs and costs were rising. Okay. And that's why H.W. Bush lost. We were coming off a bank bust at that time where there had been a massive bank bailout because this was the SNL crisis.
Okay.
And this was also a part where the defense industry was shrinking because of the end of the Cold War. And that caused a lot of layoffs, okay? And so employment was muted. You know, people were struggling to get jobs. The automakers were also laying off a lot of people because they had been getting hammered by imports at the time. GM and Ford were not doing very well against our foreign competitors. And I think that you're going to get a style like that where we're having right now a period of more like stagflation where we've got high costs and higher unemployment for a while, like right now at this point. One of the reasons I don't think balance sheets for a lot of people and companies are in better shape than they had been at in the 80s and 90s or at other times. So I think that's one reason why we're not talking about 2008 levels, but we're talking more like, now it looks more like early 90s kind of, where it was hard to find a job. I don't know if you recall, but I do recall that it was like when we graduated from college in 93, it was a tough job market for us. It was a very tough job market for us to find a job in 93. And that was like because of the effects of that recession that come out, and like the shrinking defense budgets and all of this stuff and whatever, and how that lowered employment, how the auto industry was shrinking, how it was a difficult economy. So that's I think what we're facing right now.
Okay.
Very cheery way for us to start. Yeah.
I figure it's time to take a break and move on.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Okay. We'll take a quick break. I'll come back and I'll preview to try to cheer things up a little bit. I'm going to talk about this week's election results and,
There you go. Yeah.
Stuff, you know, how things might be looking for next year's elections.
Okay.
Back after this.
What?
No, that was bad. Oh, no, that was bad. No, I don't like that either.
Once upon a
rainbows. You were on the floor, eating the bugs that you found upon my face.
No, what? What? Bye.
Okay, we are back. So, elections. We had this race, congressional race in Tennessee. The Democrat did lose, but they were expected to lose.
Yes.
The question was margins. Now, I know some people were hoping they would pull out an upset, but the reality is they lost by, I forget the exact number, it ended up being like 6% or something. But this was a district that Trump had won by 22%.
2%, yes.
It's a huge shift. And if you look at some of the maps that show shift per county or shift per whatever subgeographic area, they were all moving blue. Like very red areas were moving blue by a significant direction. And if you look at all of the special elections that have been going on since the 2024 election, On average, and I'm going to forget the exact number, but it's somewhat like 10%, maybe even a little bit more, of the shift towards the Democrats. And this is huge. Like, if this replicates at all, and you, look, you have, people have pointed out, special elections are special. There tend to be more motivated people that come out, and it's a different kind of electorate than in a midterm, let alone like every four-year presidential election. But it's a different sort of people that come out for special elections. So they're not 100% predictive, and you can get divergences. But generally speaking, if you look at the last however many midterm cycles, when one party is winning special elections by this margin, they end up taking the House of Representatives like 60-70% of the time.
Yeah. You know? Agreed. Yeah.
And, you know, and we're talking about, you know, there was also news about the Texas redistricting, and the Supreme Court like upheld the districts that, they let them stand for now.
Right. Until the case goes through. Right.
Until the case, but the case won't go through before next year's elections.
Right.
Basically, these maps will be in place for 2026. But what you have here is also the scenario where, look, people were all talking about how they gerrymandered these maps to gain five more seats. But that kind of assumes that the electorate looks a lot like it did in 2024.
Exactly. Right.
If you've got a 10-12 point shift in the electorate, then a lot of these seats that they had gerrymandered thinking they were so safe they could afford to dilute them a little bit and take over some blue areas and kill those Democratic seats are at risk.
Right.
And just more generally, if, you know, I had talked on this show a while back about, you know, people had done analysis that if everybody did all the gerrymandering for their party that they could legally do before 2026, so Texas does their thing, California does their thing, blah, blah, blah. The most typical scenario is it would represent a Republican gain of between 5 and 10 seats that they get out of that effort, net. Between, you know, Democrats doing their thing, Republicans doing their thing. If you have a scenario where the overall shift is 10 to 12 points towards the Democrats, that swamps that 5 to 10 seats.
Right, right.
You know, and you're talking a wave election, and you're talking, you know, you may have a shift of, you know, 30 seats overall, which is more than enough to bring the Democrats back into the House, and may even put the Senate at risk, which, you know, had been viewed as sort of potentially out of reach. Like, you know, the best case scenario for Democrats was getting the House back, but they probably wouldn't get the Senate back because it's just a bad set of races for the Democrats for Senate. But if you're talking about that big a wave, there's at least a chance for the Senate. You're maybe not going to predict it, but it becomes in play where maybe it wasn't before. And so, and this all has to do with the stuff that you were talking about in the last segment, Yvonne. It's like,
and they're not doing anything to fix it, which is the problem.
Because they're not doing anything to fix it, but speaking more,
you know what they're doing? We're building a ballroom, Sam. I don't know if you saw. And the ballroom we're building keeps getting a ballroom, bigger. But the ballroom keeps getting bigger and bigger.
I know. And he fired the architect who didn't want to make it as big. So you have to get
another one now, but I don't know if this one will either, because he hired an architect that is the guy that's done so much of the construction in DC historically. Okay. Which is the weird thing. And I thought, wait a minute, you went with a guy who's basically his career has been spent on trying to preserve DC looking a certain way. I don't know how the hell this guy's going to go and just agree with doing that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, like,
I'm sure this guy will get fired too, is what I'm saying.
Yes. Okay. But what, back to what I was talking about, I think the shift is not, it's twofold, and it's always like complicated what factors are at play. But one is Democrats are really riled up. You know, the Democrats are turning out for these things. They are really upset. They are turning out. They are voting for their people. And by the way, this person who came really close in Tennessee was not a moderate Democrat.
No.
They were a fairly progressive Democrat. So, like, this sort of is, you know, you get the whole arguments about, like, well, what kind of Democrats should the Democrats be running? And is, you know, adapting to the district and make sure, like, in a place like Tennessee, of course, like, if a Democrat's going to win, it's going to have to be a Republican light type candidate. And no, this was not a Republican light type candidate. They did well anyway. Now, would maybe if they'd run a Republican light, they would have actually won. I don't know. But that's item one. Number two is disillusioned Republicans, where maybe these Republicans aren't going to vote for Democrats. Some of them in the wishy-washy middle might. But a lot of you hear over and over again these people saying, this isn't what I voted for. Now, on the one hand, yes, it is, you damn idiot.
You fucking idiot. Yes. Yes, it is. You fucking morons. It's exactly what you voted for. They told you, you know, they told you they were going to eat your face. They told it to you right to your face. And what you said is that the Democrats are exaggerating about it.
Or
that they didn't really
just
mean it.
Not
or lying.
Just outright lying.
Lying. That they didn't mean it. Right.
But, you know, yes, the administration has been doing exactly what they said they were going to do. And so all these people go, oh, this is, I didn't expect this, blah, blah, blah. Come on, give me a fucking break. But, you know, and part of it is economy. You have a lot of the people who are saying, like, he promised prices would come down. Prices haven't come down.
No. Day one, he was going to kill inflation on day one, Sam.
No, not just kill inflation. He was going to make prices go
bring
down.
Prices go down.
You know, like, and
those discount houses, Sam? Are the discount houses available at the Trump Center for Peace?
Eggs did come down, did they?
Eggs did really come down.
And
as a matter of fact,
that's all people really care
about. Speaking of eggs, I went recently. And I ordered a
Fabergé egg.
Well, I did not order a Fabergé egg. Okay, but I did order eggs online to get from Costco. Okay, and the thing is that I saw the item and I'm like, okay, it said eggs. I didn't look at how many eggs I bought. Okay, I mean, I have been eating eggs right now from that order for the past couple of months. And I have been like making like massive egg breakfast. Like it was so many eggs. Okay. I got, it must be like 60 eggs or something like that. Some crazy amount. It was a box. It was literally, instead of like, you know, one of these like two little row, you know, egg carton things.
Not a dozen.
It was a box double stacked with eggs. It was just crazy. Now, what I will say is that the reason why I didn't think I was getting that many eggs was because it was cheap.
Right.
I saw the the price, and I think that that box cost me like $9. Right. And I'm like thinking, oh, I'm getting a dozen, maybe two dozen eggs, tops, or whatever. No, I got, holy shit, Sam, I got a ton of eggs for very little money. So, yes, the price of eggs did come down.
Yes, but lots of other prices have not.
No, lots of other prices have definitely not. They keep talking. Here's the thing. They keep talking supposedly how there's gas at less than $2 a gallon somewhere. And they're literally there is no place in the United States where you can get that. Nothing. It doesn't exist. But they keep talking about
it. Right. Yeah. So look, prices is one of these things where people are talking. But also on other things too. I mean, even the immigration stuff, which is supposedly one of the, you know, things that Donald Trump was stronger about, and it's an issue that the Democrats are weak on and whatever. You get all these people saying, you know, I thought he was going to get rid of the criminals, but he's going after everybody, you know?
Yes.
And again, this is one of those things. Well, this is exactly what he said he was going to do. I'm sorry.
Okay. So I'm sorry. I found my receipt. So I wouldn't lie.
For you, back on the eggs. Back on the eggs.
Yeah. Yes. Kirkland Signature eggs, large. What I didn't see, yes. It was five dozens.
Five dozen. Okay.
I got five dozen eggs for $14.97.
Okay.
Five dozen. Basically, $3 a dozen.
Okay.
Very cheap. But yeah, I got five dozen eggs. It's just ridiculous.
You know, if I was a little bit closer, I'd come over for a few omelets. But, you know.
I still got some eggs left from it. Yeah.
No, but yeah, look, there are a lot of disillusioned Trump supporters. And third, the Epstein stuff. We're sort of in a lull with Epstein news, but that'll hit in a couple more weeks. We're about halfway through the 30 days.
I mean, it's going to blow up again, right? Because if they don't...
It will blow up again.
Because here are the scenarios, right? They have dragged on releasing it because it's bad. So we know that it's got to be bad. So that's why they keep dragging on releasing it. Either they'll try to refuse to release it again, or to release something so redacted that we run out of ink trying to print it.
Right.
And it's going to leave because it's so redacted, then what it's going to do is make it blow up again because then they're hiding everything.
Right. So with all of these factors together, you get Republicans who are just turn out as depressed. They're a little bit disillusioned. Also, like, even if they are gung-ho on Trump, that doesn't always translate into whoever their local person is.
Did you see that Nancy Mace is like, it sounded like she's going to quit? As well, aside from MTG?
Yes.
That's another bad sign for Republicans.
Yes. Well, and there are apparently a whole bunch of Republicans who are thinking about, at the very least, not running again and possibly quitting early. And I saw speculation that one of the issues here is that if you get one or two more quitting, the Democrats have a majority. So, like, you have to, like... They're going to carefully consider their timing because nobody's going to want to be the one Republican
that tips the balance.
So, like, the question is, like, anybody who wants to get out has to do it quick because otherwise they might be locked in because they don't want to be that person.
Well, you know, or somebody, you know, unfortunately we've had this happen. Somebody gets sick or dies.
Well, yeah, that could happen too.
Because that happens.
So far this term, it's only been Democrats who died.
I know.
Had to be replaced. Fuck.
Jeez. Yeah. The damn luck.
But, you know, yeah. So you never know when something could happen. But yeah, no. And look, what you're hearing from those Republicans, there are two factors in play. One, is nobody really wants to be in the minority. So there are a lot of people thinking, we're going to lose next time. I don't want to be here if we're in the minority because it's not fun. But then we've also got people saying, well, actually, it's not fun right now either because we can't actually do anything.
We can't actually do anything. Right.
We're not enacting any policies. We're not doing anything. All we do is grovel to Donald Trump and do whatever he says. And I'm not, they're not having fun. And a lot of people don't like Johnson. I specifically heard some reports this week about how a bunch of the folks who are considering leaving are women. And one of the reasons is specifically because they feel like Johnson treats women like shit, even in his own party.
You don't say. Really? You're shocked? Oh, my goodness. You are shocked that your dear Republican leader is a misogynist. Wow. It took you this long to find out, you stupid idiots.
Yes.
How do you think they finally figured it out, Sam? Did you see that cringy interview where he was like sitting like with his wife, but literally was trying to sit as far away as possible from his wife?
I did not see that.
There is a video clip that is hilarious where he is shown in some interview with his wife that their interaction is so fucked up. Okay. All right. In terms of physical contact or whatever, I mean, he is literally just seems to, they trying to avoid her at all costs.
That's lovely. Well, and of course we've got the rumors about J.D. Vance getting ready to dump Usha for Charlie Kirk's widow.
I totally buy that. I mean, that's on brand for these guys. I mean, look, Newt Gingrich dumped his dying wife for somebody else, right?
Twice, I think.
Yeah, right.
Once while his existing wife had cancer.
But when they had cancer, was dying, right? Yeah.
Yes.
So, hey, this is on brand.
Perfectly. Okay, so, yeah. We may see more Republicans leave. We may see that staunched by the fact that they just can't afford to lose any more people. But yeah, as of now, we're down to 2 vacant seats. I'm just looking at the stats. As of December 4th, 2 days ago, which by the way, apparently when a Republican was elected in a special election, there was no delay in swearing them in. But it's now 220 Republicans, 213 Democrats, 2 vacant seats at the moment.
By the way, I just saw that there's an opinion piece on by the Washington Post editorial board where the headline was "Relax is not a winning economic message." And this is about the economy and Mike Johnson specifically. OK, Republicans have a holiday message for cash strapped Americans. Chill out. Relax, in quotes, said Speaker Mike Johnson, advised on Thursday, assuring voters that we'll feel better once provisions from the big, beautiful bill kick in next year. We are exactly on the trajectory where we've always planned to be. Steady at the wheel, everybody. It's gonna be fine. Sam, it's gonna be fine.
It's gonna be fine. Excellent. All right.
Look, the big, beautiful bill provisions is only gonna give people like me more money. Okay? That's
it. And by people like me, you mean people who are fairly well off anyway.
Exactly. Yes. Those are the only fucking people that are getting money. He's fucking everybody else. The people who wound up having to cut back, the number over here said, apparently, that Americans right now, this year, consumers estimate they will spend an average of $778 on holiday presents, down from $1,012 at this point last year. Okay, growing numbers are using buy now.
Yet. I need to
growing numbers are using buy now, pay later services. Another indication people feel strapped for cash. Data released by ADP showed an expect. Well, that was the unemployment drop, but this is, you know, this is the winning message that Speaker Mike Johnson is selling. Relax, don't worry about it. Steady the course. What we did is great, and it's only going to get better.
Right.
Despite every indicator saying the opposite. Which is probably why these people are like, you know, they're like, he's driving us as a cliff, so let's get off the clown car before it crashes off the cliff.
Well, and Some of these Republicans, by the way, have also been quoted in the press saying that if there was another speaker election now, Johnson would not win it, but he would not have the votes. However, I have not heard that there's any stirrings going on to try to remove him. Right
but
now.
The biggest problem was...
Because they know that would be a disaster, too. Like, who else would
another disaster.
Pick?
I mean, exactly. They're going to go through, like, another... How many rounds did it take for him to be speaker? I mean, we lost track. I mean, that was just...
Well, no,
that was
the first time.
That was the first time. No, no.
The second time
When he got the job, that we settled on Mike Johnson, okay? It took a bazillion rounds. If Mike Johnson said resigned right now, there's nobody in line to take this job.
Right.
So it's going to be a shit show again.
Again. Yes. Okay, let's wrap this thing up.
All right, let's wrap.
Can we wrap this up?
We could wrap it up.
Curmudgeons-corner.com. Go there. Find all the stuff. All our old episodes, transcripts going back a couple years now, all the ways to contact us, a link to buy a mug. You guys wanted a link to buy a mug. Start buying damn mugs. You know? I haven't seen the order of like 100 mugs at a time. That's what I expected, folks.
We need to get like, you know how they're for... It used to be a big thing in order to funnel cash to, like, say, somebody at the House of Representatives was that if they came out with a book, all of a sudden, you know, some guy would buy 10,000 copies of the book. Okay.
Right. Yes.
That was the easy way to funnel money. So, look, if you want to funnel money to us and buy 10,000 mugs, we are open to having money funneled towards us. Yes.
Yes.
We can be bought.
Yes, the new all MAGA all the time Curmudgeon's Corner for the right price.
I think that if they, you know, they could give me like a, I will say that if I do that negotiation, I will take the money up front. And I'm sure that after the first week, they will try to get their money back, which I'll say no. And well, I'm not going to refund it.
It'll already be in the Caymans or someone.
Exactly. They're not getting their fucking money back, and I'm not, and they're not going to renew. Hey, I got to do it to them. Hey, they're doing it to us. I got to do it to them. Give me a fucking break.
There you go. And of course, a link to our Patreon where you can give us money as well. At various levels there, we will mention you on the show. We will ring a bell. We will send you a postcard. We will send you one of those mugs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And at $2 a month or more, or if you just ask us, we will invite you to the Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, where Yvonne and I and a bunch of others are hanging out throughout the week, sharing links, chatting. There are all kinds of conversations going on. Yvonne and Pete and some other folks were talking about cars for a while. They were talking about, like, you know, what exactly is wealthy, what's not wealthy, all this kind of stuff. There are all kinds of topics going on. But what, Yvonne, is something that was discussed on the Curmudgeon's Corner Slack this week that we have not talked about on the show that you would like to highlight?
Well, there were two things. One is Sam made a point of mentioning that I didn't share this picture of this drunk raccoon. Apparently, a raccoon broke into a liquor store of some kind and broke
Virginia.
The bottles, and then licked the alcohol, got drunk, and was found passed out drunk by the bathroom, like laid out. Like, I have actually picked up drunk people laid out.
I thought you were
going to
say you'd actually picked up drunk raccoons.
No, I've done this with people. Okay, more than once. Okay, that they passed out at the bathroom like this, not with a raccoon. Apparently, the distillery, Virginia Distillery Company, formal statement regarding the very intoxicated raccoon. They issued a statement. We'd like to address the reports that there are very intoxicated raccoon found inside Virginia ABC store. According to eyewitnesses, the raccoon entered the premises, bypassed the allocated berman, and went straight for our award-winning American single malt. We're proud of our whiskey. We did not expect it to be so quite appealing to local wildlife. Anyway, so they had that. So we had the drunk squirrel. Okay. The second
now,
thing
apparently,
that
speaking of AI as well, this was a true incident
This is a true
However, people have been spreading around fake
that it was
AI video of the raccoon drinking out of the bottles and stuff.
Yeah.
And
I,
so
I at first thought that it was fake. So I didn't share it. I didn't realize it was real.
And here's one of the, this is what is going to make our media environment so complicated. This was a true story, but with fake video circulating about it.
Look, I saw Progressive the other day actually do a commercial showing like animals driving, which they actually mentioned that it was AI generated. And this was a TV commercial that they did, like with a voice of Flo, but with like AI generated images. So this is, we're going to get a lot more of this. So anyway, the second story talking about AI that Sam shared. Okay. You can go on a real live date with an AI girlfriend at this New York City cafe. We wish we were kidding. Okay.
The picture they have showing there, by the way, you go to this restaurant. Yep. It's like, it ranges like a semi-fancy formal restaurant with like, you know, tablecloths and candles and all this crap. And then at the table, when you sit down, they prop up a phone on a holder that has your AI girlfriend to talk to during your date.
I mean, you know, couldn't they at least get you an iPad?
I mean, it looks like a phone in the picture.
No, yeah, I know, but couldn't they at least get you a fucking iPad? I mean, for real?
You think?
You know, I mean, just
hell,
they could
do a full size monitor, even, you know.
They give you Apple Vision, a screen, so you could think that, you know, you're like looking at them or something. There you go. That's a good use for Apple. Vision thing.
They could indeed. But no, this looked like it looked like you had a phone where you were FaceTiming somebody, but it's a fake person.
Right. This is, I mean, I have to, I find myself not being drawn.
You know, when I FaceTime my fake AI girlfriend, I do it from home. I don't need to go to the restaurant.
I find myself not drawn to having fake conversations with AI. I don't. You tried to do it on the show. It was kind of blah. I upgraded my Google Home Assistant now to Gemini, and it says that I can have conversations with it. I have not been interested in having a conversation with the
fucking... Yeah, I'll tell you, I mentioned I'm paying at least three different AI companies, one of which I'm really using. The other two I used earlier, but use less now. But I'm always using it to do specific things. I can't say I've ever once just like... You know, I'm gonna talk to it. I'm gonna have a conversation. I just haven't done that. Even when I use the voice mode, I'm asking it questions. Like I've done that where like I'm walking the dog. Alex and I and my mom, who sometimes walks the dog with us, we're talking about something. Like the other day, I was walking. We were walking the dog. My mom, my son, and myself. We're walking the dog. We're going around. My mom makes a comment about like one of the trees we pass and how it had really big leaves, and she wondered something about it. So I pop open, you know, ChatGPT. I take a picture of the tree.
Yeah.
I ask it, what's up with this tree? What's the name of the tree? Whatever it tells me, it talks to me. And I ask some follow-up questions. It was the big leaf maple, by the way. My mom was remarking on how big the leaves were. And so we asked what it is. It turns out the name of the damn tree is the big leaf maple.
Nice.
And it was like, you couldn't be any more creative than that. It couldn't be like something else. No, it's the big leaf maple because it has big leaves. Anyway, it was purpose. Like, you know, I'm using the AI to get some information. I'm using the AI to help program something I'm working on. I'm using the AI for something. I can't say I've ever once just been like, you know, I'm lonely right now.
Let me talk to my AI.
The next half hour talking to
AI. No, I get nothing from that. I mean, I just, no. It's like the same problem that I have with watching like these supposed like scary movies where I know it's fake and I'm like just looking at it. I'm like, this is just stupid. And that's it.
Meanwhile, I get startled by things on shows I'm watching that aren't even supposed to be scary.
Exactly. There you go.
And I jump and not Godzilla. I just laughed.
Two more things. Yes. I want to mention two more things. One was I shared, I lost everything. At a friend's recommendation, I invested my life savings in a firm abroad. Now it's all gone and the CEO was in court. What now? So, you know,
what now is
investing everything into some obscure offshore investment, okay, and then being shocked at the fact that you lost all your money, okay, and, you know, it's a scam. You're a fucking idiot, okay? Why would you do that, okay?
Just next. Put all your money into the Donald Trump coin like normal.
Exactly, and normal people just lose 100% that way, yes. Then the last one that I had, it was there was an article on Bloomberg about the Microsoft is the house that Excel built. And they talked about how Excel started or whatever. The interesting part about the story was that the guy who was the key developer at some point basically quit Microsoft. He was like, I'm burnt out. This sucks. This was sometime in the 80s. And he decided to go. He said, fuck this. I quit. I'm going to be working at a farm. And picking vegetables. And he did that for 2 to 3 months and then realized, shit, this sucks. I'm going to go back. Let me call. And they actually wanted him back at Microsoft. Let me call them to see if they'll hire me back. Okay. And so he did. But the guy went in the middle of it, said, fuck this. I hate this shit. I'm going to go work on a farm and pick vegetables. And then realized, what the fuck am I doing? This sucks.
Okay. You know, I can see some of, you know, as I'm trying to figure out what to do with my life, I'm like, okay, I could pick vegetables.
Exactly.
You know, let's go do that.
If you look at this guy, he said that, yeah, after a little bit of doing that, he realized, holy shit, this sucks.
No, I honestly, there are some things that are complete career shifts that might be interesting to me. Picking vegetables is not one of them.
Picking vegetables.
Farm work in general is not something that appeals to me, I don't think.
Yeah. No, he went and he basically just went and he was like burnt out. He's pissed off. He quit. And yeah, he was picking vegetables for a bit. I can't remember exactly. It was farm work and it was hard. And he realized that, yeah, I don't like doing this. And let me see. I actually found it here specifically. He was so frustrated both by the delay and he'd been excluded from the meetings in which decision was made that he quit, telling colleagues his plan was to leave the software industry in favor of migrant farm work. I look back on it. It's clear I was just totally burnt out. Project Odyssey got back on track after Klunder ran out of cash somewhere in the OJ Valley 2 months after his departure. I picked lettuce a couple of times and did some other odd jobs, he recalls. Then my backpack was stolen. I'm like, I need money. Let me call Microsoft. And they were desperate to have him back. And so they were like, fine, just get back here.
Beautiful. Okay. I think we're done, Yvonne.
We're done.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us yet again. Have a great week. Blah, blah, blah. Next week, I will have that link for everybody to suggest things for us to predict on our annual prediction show. In the meantime, stay safe. Have a great week. We'll talk to you later. Goodbye.
Bye.
Thanks, Yvonne. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
Later. Bye.